When four men spilled out of a narrow court, one crashing into Ashmont with force enough to dislodge him from Ripley's light grasp and push him into a shop front. Ashmont bounced back with surprising energy.
"You clumsy, bleeding half-wit! I have to get married, you bloody arsehole!"
At the same time, he drove his fist at the fellow's face. One of the man's friends tried to butt in. With a sigh, Ripley grabbed him by the back of the collar. The fellow swung at him, obliging Ripley to knock him into the gutter. What happened after that was what often happened when Ashmont was about. A lot of filthy language and filthy fighting and men rushing out of the clubs shouting bets and a female or two screaming somewhere. Then it was over. Their foes lay strewn about the pavement. Ripley didn't wait to count or identify them. He collected Ashmont from the railing he'd slumped against and trudged to the corner with him. He signalled, and the first in line of the hackneys plodded their way. He threw Ashmont into the decrepit coach and directed the driver to Ashmont House. Servants waited up as they were accustomed to do for Ashmont. They bore him up the stairs to his bedroom and undressed and washed him without fuss. They were old hands at dealing with their master's little foibles. After he'd seen his grace safely tucked into bed, Ripley left. He needed a bath, a nap, and a change of clothes. He had a wedding to attend in a few hours. Chapter 1. Newland House, Kensington. Late forenoon of 11 June 1833. If the bride was drunk, which she wasn't, it was on account of celebrating. In a very little while, Lady Olympia Hightower was going to make all of her family's dreams come true. Hers too. Most of them. She would become the Duchess of Ashmont. Teetering on the brink of 26, she ought to thank her lucky stars she'd won the heart, admiration, something, of one of England's three most notorious libertines, a trio of dukes known as their disgraces. She narrowed her eyes at the looking glass. Behind gold-rimmed spectacles, eyes of a can't-make-up-their-mind grey-blue-green took a moment to focus on the grandeur that was her, she, whatever. Elaborate side curls of a commonplace brown framed her heart-shaped face. An intricate arrangement of plaits, topped by a great blossom of pleated lace adorned with orange blossoms, crowned her head. A blonde lace veil cascaded over her bare shoulders, down over the full lace-covered sleeves, and on past her waist. She looked down at herself. Four knots marched down to the V of the waistline. Below that swelled full skirts of brocaded silk. A great waste of money, which would have been better spent on Eton for Clarence, or a cornetcy for Andrew, or something for one of the boys. Apart from his heir, Stephen Lord Ludford, the Earl of Gonerby had five sons to support, a subject to which he'd given no thought whatsoever. His mind, unlike his daughter's, was not practical. Thus her present predicament. Which wasn't a predicament at all, so everybody said. There was nothing predicamental about being a duchess. In any event, practicality had nothing to do with this bridal extravaganza. The money must be thrown away on Olympia on a single dress, because, according to Aunt Lavinia, it was an investment in the future. A duchess-to-be couldn't wear any old thing to her wedding. The bridal ensemble had to be expensive and fashionable, though not flamboyantly so, because a duchess-to-be ought to look expensively fashionable, though not flamboyantly so. After the wedding was another matter entirely. A duchess could pour the entire contents of her jewel boxes over herself and never be overdressed. With a few adjustments, a different arrangement on her head, and more diamonds or pearls or both, Olympia would wear the dress to the next drawing room, when her mother or perhaps Aunt...